All right, hockey fans, listen up, because we've got something special cooked up for playoff season. It's called the Daily Faceoff Playoff Parlay Challenge, and it's going to add some serious spice to your playoff experience. Now, here's the deal. Every playoff game, you're going to be faced with a handful of questions. It's like your own personal playoff puzzle, and it's free to join. And there are prizes, because who doesn't love winning stuff? Daily winners, you're getting hooked up with gift cards. Treat yourself to some nation gear or maybe even your favorite jersey. And for the big dogs, the people who can win an entire round, it's straight, cold, hard cash. We're talking about real dough for your hockey knowledge. So lace up those skates, stretch those thumbs, and get ready to show off your hockey IQ in the Daily Faceoff Playoff Parlay Challenge. Sign up today and play every game day at games.dailyfaceoff.com and prove your puck prowess.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Can you see it? Did you know
this? Checked, but the puck comes right to Pettersson, who tries a bank pass for Besser. In with a shot, he scores!
A moment's notice. Adams leaves the puck.
To the line, Hughes scores!
Yes, existence.
Here, like I don't cover the Canucks. Yeah. I cover Quinn Hughes and what he's doing to the Canucks.
Robot, hold my head.
Just wave the guy and get Demko involved. I wanted them in and down Wednesday.
Wow, we should do a radio show together. Right on. I want to fist bump you right now.
What I'll have.
Pearl steals, cutting in, shoots, scores.
Public display.
They slayed the dragon.
Don't waste all the good stuff on the off air. Let's go.
Hello, Canucks fans. Welcome back to another episode of the Canucks Conversation. My name is Chris Faber, and joining me on the line is David Quadrelli. But first, I just want to give a shout-out to the presenting sponsor of the show, Zephyr Epic, as we embark on episode 138. Quads, you're fresh off the game, man. How was the experience being in the arena tonight?
Great, as always. It's always nice to get to an arena. And you know what? We're a blessed few that get to go watch live hockey right now. Like, the pandemic sucks. It's hard on everybody. People find solace in watching Canucks games, hockey games, whatever. It is nice to go there live. I must tell you, and although it is work, you can't really complain when your job is just to watch hockey and then write and talk about it, as we are now. But yeah, it's we're recording this at 11:50 at night. I think this might be our latest recording ever, Chris. I don't know, maybe you've recorded later. I think you interviewed Nils Höglander once at 3 a.m., so there's that. But yeah, this is the latest we've ever recorded together, I think.
Yeah, not only is it a very late episode, I'm also recording from a bathroom, so my audio definitely sounds different, so I apologize if it's, like, bad quality. but I am recording from a bathroom because this is the smallest room at my girlfriend's house that seems to be the area where I can get away from everything. So I hope the audio doesn't sound bad. This is my first time recording. I feel like I've done recording from a bathroom before for another reason, but I feel like this might be the first one at the same time.
Nothing beats you doing a radio hit inside posters inside Walmart, or was it Canadian Tire? Where were you when you did that hit with the Utica guys and you hit inside some posters?
Yeah, that was the a Canadian Tire, as I completely forgot that I was going on Utica Radio to talk about the Comets from a Vancouver point of view, I guess. And yeah, that was pretty awkward. Like you said, yeah, there was like those poster flaps that like you have, and I just like opened up two of them, put my head in there, and like people were walking by me as I'm like screaming into my phone about the Utica Comets at a Canadian Tire in South Surrey. So yeah, I think this beats that though. Like maybe I have to take a picture of my setup in here. I got like the laptop on the toilet. I'm just sitting here in the sink with my mic right in front of me. So it's quite the setup tonight. But we got a lot to get into, man. Definitely wrap up the game that we just saw here. A little bit of brouhaha at the end there after Forkbutt bumped into Nils Höglander after the thing and made a huge huge pileup. That was actually, like, the pictures that came out of that were pretty funny. What was it kind of like in the rink? Because you kind of get to hear some of the players chirping back and forth when they have a little bit of a battle like that.
Okay, so first things first, I want to say that Travis Green, I've rarely seen Travis get as mad as he was tonight, and I came home and asked my brother if he heard it on the broadcast, and you couldn't hear it on the broadcast, he said. I don't know, maybe you heard it, Chris, but maybe my brother just missed it, but Travis was yelling for a good minute, I think it was in the second period, at the refs for not calling a hook. That was an effing hook. That was an effing hook. He said that, like, six times, probably, and he was loud. Like, you could hear him, and it was like, I was surprised that the broadcast didn't, like, did you hear it on the broadcast?
I don't think so. There was one JT Miller F-bomb that got caught.
Gotcha.
But I didn't hear anything from Travis Green.
No, Travis was yelling loud tonight. And yeah, I thought, like, it was funny. I did the post-game report for Canucks Army, and I gave top performer of the night to Travis Green for not getting fined by the league for coming out and saying anything bad about the refs, because I knew he was already upset about it. And then the refs kind of, you know, all he said was he was a little bit surprised that they didn't end up with the man advantage at the end of the whole Höglander thing. But yeah, like, Travis Green looked almost exhausted tonight talking to media, right? And yeah, I don't know. It was just it was interesting to me to kind of watch that game and see everything live. Like I said, like, Travis yelling, that's something that the broadcast didn't pick up, but he was very, very angry at the refs. So I kind of brought that into my thinking of the post game sort of thing. And yeah, as for the Höglander incident, I saw the hit right away, the one Höglander threw on Forbert. I didn't think it was dirty. I really didn't, and I went back and watched it a few times. I really didn't think it was dirty. Like, at first I thought he led with his elbow. And that's no surprise from Nils Höglander. People who followed your coverage of him when he was at all the various tournaments and leagues he played in before, that's no surprise that he's leading with his elbow. But I went back and watched it. It looked pretty clean. Like, I didn't really see why that would piss off Forbert so much. I think it might have just been the fact that it was like a 20-year-old rookie who's also like a short king, 5'9", that hit you and you're like 6'4". Maybe it just, I don't know, maybe it just rubbed him the wrong way, but it really wasn't a dirty hit. And I don't know, it was so bad watching him get cross-checked, because it was like, okay, there's a call. No, we're not calling anything. And by the end of it, Höglander was just like, what the hell, man? Like, he just, like, stood up and just looked at the ref. He's like, are you kidding me? Yeah, it was bad.
Yeah. And that's one that's been starting to get called a lot more, right? I mean, that's one that we see get called a lot in front of the net, and it's kind of interesting. And you mentioned it. I mean, that's a penalty, right? I mean, you can't just cross-check a guy in the back three times like that. There was good reason for Höglander to look at the ref after. Not really a huge situation to play. I kind of want to look at the bigger picture right now for the Vancouver Canucks, because we've kind of talked about it over these past few games here, the last couple shows for sure, as they've been, you know, they won 2 out of 3 for a little bit there. They looked pretty strong. And I think that the gameplay was excellent from them. They were starting to get a lot more scoring chances, but the thing that's hurt them so far and you saw it tonight, is just the inability to finish. And I want, you know, from the rink, let's get your take on it, because it felt like the Canucks, especially in that third period, like they dominated that third period for possession, but just can't get a goal past Brassard. And I'm wondering what do you think are we seeing right now that's making it just kind of tough for them to finish, specifically at 5-on-5?
I think they're getting in their own way to an extent. Like, Tanner Pearson, at the start of the game, had a pretty doorstep opportunity, and he put it high. And what's the excuse there? It's just he missed the net. They're getting in their own way, right? And yeah, like, they didn't penetrate the middle great tonight. Their shots weren't from the best locations. But when you get those chances, you have to convert. Like, that's just the way it is. You have to convert when you have chances like that. Like, listen, Laurent Brossoit is not a fantastic goalie. Like, he's a good goalie. He's a great backup. Don't get me wrong. Like, I'm not coming here trying to trash Surrey's very own Laurent Brossoit. I'm not trying to do that. But he is not as good as his record against the Canucks, two shutouts now, would suggest. He's not that good. And there were a few tonight, as I wrote it in the post-game report, there were a few instances tonight where he lost track of the puck because there was traffic in front of him, and the puck just hit him. Like, he got lucky, and then there was a few that the Canucks tipped wide that he really didn't see, and it was just, you know, like, the stat sheet will tell you that Laurent Brossoit came out and had a stellar game. He played great. You don't get a shutout if you don't play great, but the Canucks got in their own way tonight. Like, that's just the way it was. The Canucks got in their own way by not being able to finish. Adam Gaudette had a chance, put it wide on a pretty open net. And then, you just go down the list. Like, I'm trying to remember all of the chances I saw tonight that were just, they just missed the net. Or, you know, there was one where it was Yolevi, actually. Yolevi took a shot from the wall, and Besser redirected it in front, and it literally just went wide. Like, that's just, you know, like, I don't want to use the term bad luck, but the Canucks just didn't finish, and I don't think there's much explanation for it other than that. Like, I don't think the explanation and the takeaway from tonight is that, well, the Canucks just ran into a hot goaltender. Like, no, I think they made a goaltender who had a good game look like Sergei Bobrovsky out there. I'm talking about Vezina Sergei Bobrovsky, not last year in Florida, although he's having a pretty good start to this year. But yeah, you know what I mean? Like, I don't think the takeaway of this is, oh yeah, like, the Canucks, they just ran into a hot goaltender. It's okay. It's a moral victory. Like, no, they got in their own way. They didn't finish. Like, they have to finish. At the end of the day, the onus is on the players to start finishing these chances. I don't think there's anything to blame it on other than that.
Yeah, it's tough because, like, you're seeing this team have success at the things that they weren't having success with early on in the season, right? I mean, they're able to control possession now in the offensive zone. They're able to get shots off. They're able to move the puck around. I mean, a lot better than what we saw over, you know, that tough stretch of games where they lost 6 straight, 7 of 8. Like, they're looking a lot better, but the problem still just happens to be, it's something that, I swear, like, this Canucks team has had this problem for what feels like 6 to 7 years now, where it's just, they, even when they play better than the other team, they just can't seem to get the goals over the top to give them the wins. And I think you really saw that on display tonight. I mean, I'm looking at the lines and the line of the Lotto line and looking at what they just did. I mean, they controlled 87% of expected goals in that game. 88% if they round it up. So 88% of the expected goals on the ice of their 13 minutes of 5-on-5 hockey, and you don't get a goal out of that. I mean, that's a really tough look. 9 scoring chances for that line. So, like, that line's getting back to it. But I'm curious to get your opinion, because I think Pettersson talked about it just a little bit, because he said that, you know, maybe they are trying to make that one extra pass a little bit too much instead of trying to just get the shot on net and see what happens. Because Brock Besser has changed his game where he's able to score a lot of these goals in tight now. Like, he's doing a better job of being versatile when it comes to scoring. Not only scoring on the rush and scoring from his shot on the left side, but scoring around the net as well. And when you have shooters like JT Miller and Elias Pettersson, I'm just wondering, is that what's going on with the Lotto line, do you think? Do you think they just need to shoot a little bit more from what we've seen specifically in this game that we just saw?
I think Pettersson specifically needs to shoot more. Like, he had a couple chances tonight where he definitely could have shot, and he didn't. And I know it's cliche because he goes for the extra pass, and it's worked for him in the past. I get it. But, dude, the guy has a really good shot. Like, he's got one of the best shots in the league, and he needs to let it go. Like, it's as simple as that. He needs, I don't know if it's a confidence thing. I don't know if he just wants to make, make the sure play and try and go for the pass and make a tap in. I don't know what it is. I wish I had an answer, Chris, but yes, Elias Pettersson needs to shoot more. And on the topic of the lotto line, watching them tonight, and I'm sure you can agree to this too, Brock Besser's the motor on that line. Like, he is what that line runs through now. And if you told me that a year ago, if you told me that was going to be the case, I would have called you insane. But as we wrote at the start of the year, Brock Besser's feeling healthy finally, and that confidence is back for him. And he's saying this is really the first time he's felt as good as he did in his rookie year, and the results are there. And it's showing, like Travis was talking about it, when Brock's moving his feet, he's at his best. And yeah, that's cliche, but you watch him play, and it's true. There were a few instances tonight, Chris, where there were pucks that got shot from the blue line and they got turned over and Winnipeg was going to break out the other way and Besser wouldn't let them. There were a few instances where Besser was right on them and like just a hound on the puck. And it's interesting because he was never really a floater. He's taken strides for his defensive game, but I feel like you're almost seeing him be more tenacious and want it more. You know what I mean? Like he's starting to bring in like aspects of Nils Höglander's game into his game in that sense.
Yeah, I agree with it. I mean, I think that what you're seeing Brock Besser do right now is just be 100% healthy. He's probably talked about it in the past when he's done interviews, but right now you can actually see it on the ice, right? Like, he is skating a little bit harder, and he is just getting himself that extra little step that's going to give him his ability to get that shot off. And when maybe he didn't have that extra step last year or the year before, I mean, coming back from that tough back injury, coming off of the battling the wrist, like, it's a great spot for him to be at right now. I mean, what, second in the NHL for goal scoring, only behind Austin Matthews. He's ripping his shot, like, coming in on that 4-on-1 against Jacob Markstrom the other day. You look at that and you see like Pettersson on the ice, you see Miller on the ice, you see Hughes on the ice, and you're like, I kind of want Brock Besser taking that shot, you know? Like, I think it's a very different story last year, but from what he's done this year, you want Besser taking the shot with those best four players on the Canucks, the best four scoring options for the Vancouver Canucks. I would want to have that puck on Brock Besser's stick just because of the confidence that he has right now and the way that he's looking when he's fully healthy. So I agree with you, and I think we have to look at it from the other end of that line right now, because a lot of people calling for JT Miller off of the lotto line. Where do you kind of stand on the situation? Is it just something for him to, like, does he just need some sort of a reset to maybe get the motor back running? We saw a little bit of a jump in his game when he was thrown on the penalty kill, but there's something off about the way that he's playing compared to what we expect after seeing his first year in Vancouver. What are you seeing with JT Miller right now, Quads?
I'm curious, Chris, if this is just a case of a player who overachieved last year and had a really good season last year and is now kind of playing at what was expected of him when he was acquired. Like, let's be clear here. JT Miller exceeded expectations greatly in his first season with the Canucks. That was not what they were expecting him to do. They thought it'd be a good fit, and they were absolutely right about that. But we're starting to see maybe this is the player that everybody thought they were getting. He's still a great player. So, I don't know. Like, when I think about the lotto line, I just, the chances are there, but they're not finishing them. And watching them tonight, like, they were the Canucks' best line, in my opinion. Tonight, they were the Canucks' best line. And I don't think you want to change that. I think they're going to be hungrier next game. I would be absolutely stunned if the lotto line doesn't have one of their best games of the season next game. Like, I think that's what you're in for. When you see that frustration from Miller and even Pettersson in the post game, just being like, yeah, like, I'm tired of talking about how we had good chances but didn't score, or how we played well and didn't score. He's tired of talking about it.
Let me cut in there, Quads. Let me cut in there for a second. That was my favorite quote from Elias Pettersson all season long, because I think us as the media asking these questions, we're tired of hearing it too. And I think for a player to finally come out and say, like, listen, we're tired of saying, yeah, we played a good game but couldn't get the goals. Like, that's the thing that this Canucks team really needs to figure out, right? I mean, it's been a problem for them for years, like I said. just getting over the top and, you know, scoring more goals than you're expected to. You put up a ton of expected goals, that's great, but man, you really got to score some eventually. And hearing that quote from Pettersson today, it just made me say, like, okay, like, they know, right? Like, they know that they need to get to the net a little bit more with more bodies, fire more shots on there, and actually get more better scoring chances. I heard that quote from Petey today, and I said, like, it's nice that someone's acknowledging it, right? Like, because they are getting scoring chances. They are outplaying teams, but they're not winning games enough still, right? And I think that them knowing it is the first step anyways into kind of changing the way that they attack the net to actually get goals instead of expected goals. It's time to actually put up goals in the teams and get wins. Like, expected goals are great, and they help us write articles, and everybody loves advanced stats, but goals win you games in the end. And I think them acknowledging it right now is a good step in the right direction anyways.
Yeah, absolutely. No, like, it's interesting because, you know, people are like, oh, you guys are media, blah, blah, blah. But it's important for a player to come out and kind of take leadership like that. And we haven't been given Bo after the past couple games. And, you know, like, after a loss, typically the captain comes out and talks. That wasn't the case. It was Pettersson tonight. And I think he showed some great leadership by saying that. Like, just coming out and saying, like, yeah, I'm tired of talking about how we played well but didn't win or didn't score goals or whatever the exact quote was, but that's the gist of it. But yeah, like, you've got to love that from Pettersson, and I think you're right. I think that's that has to be your favorite quote of him from the season, aside from him answering the question about his weight. That was gold, and I think that one's still going to be my favorite.
Most definitely. And if we can speak about media Zooms one more time and just add one thing to it, please stop sending us Thatcher Demko after losses.
Oh my gosh.
You're not going to get anything out of Demko.
I was going to tweet this, but this is what happened, okay? For those that don't watch all the Zoom calls, and I don't blame you, this is what happened. So Thatcher Demko's the first up, okay? The Canucks PR person says, okay, we're joined by Thatcher Demko. Please use the raise hand function to indicate you have a question. Silence for about 8 seconds. Just a reminder to use the raise hand function if you have a question for Thatcher. Like, 4 seconds of silence. Demko cracks a smile. PR person goes, okay, if there's no, and then he goes, oh, okay, and then there was a question. But Thatcher got like 2 questions, and I'm like sitting there and I'm looking around, and like there's a few different people around me, and I'm looking around and nobody even has their hand up on Zoom or anything. And what are you supposed to ask a goaltender who let in 1 goal and his team lost because he got 0 runs aboard? Like, what are we supposed to ask him? Like, the question that was asked was a great question, yeah, but it was like, I don't know, like, you know what he's going to say, which is half this job, but what he was asked is, Thatcher, is it just disappointing to not get the run support? And it's like, yeah, it is. Like, obviously it is. And, like, that's not a shot at the reporter who asked the question. It was a fair question, but I was just like, why are we being sent the goaltender after a loss like this? Or, like, the equivalent of that, Holtby got sent out when they lost, like, 7-1, and they just didn't play defense in front of him. And I was just like, what is he supposed to say about this?
Yeah, I think somebody needs to give them a memo and just say, like, we don't need the goaltender every night.
Yeah.
Like, if the goaltender makes a difference in the game, and, like a huge difference, I think a difference enough to make it a win or a loss, then you send out the goaltender, but, you know, or if he has a good game, anything like that, but not, like, you mentioned it. Getting a goalie in a game where he gives up 1 goal and the team doesn't score any might be the worst media situation ever for somebody over Zoom, because it's just, it's horrible. And I think that, like, it was so funny when you said that, like, nobody's like, please use the raise hand function, and nobody uses it at all. That was absolutely hilarious. So I guess to stick on that for a little bit though, I'll let you have some runway here before we go to break, and maybe just talk about what you maybe saw from Demko tonight, kind of being in the arena and getting able to see what he does kind of between the whistles and pick up on some tendencies, because I know you love all that stuff.
Well, I mean, I'm not gonna spend 10 minutes talking about what he does in between whistles, but you know, he played a great game. And this is interesting to me, Chris, and I'll get your opinion on it too, but when I look at this situation, look, Braden Holtby played outstanding in Calgary. I thought, personally, that he was going to get this start. This is a clear message from the coaching staff and Ian Clark that Thatcher Demko is their starter. He is the guy. And tonight, was an opportunity for him to either show that he deserves to be the guy, or, listen, there's a guy waiting in the wings, ready to take that spot if you're not ready for it. So show us you deserve it. And that's exactly what he did tonight. That was interesting to me because, look, Braden Holtby's a veteran netminder. He knew what he was getting himself into when he signed here. He knew it was going to be a 1A, 1B situation. The partnership's great between them. They both want to play, but they both really drive each other. They push each other, right? And they know that they both need to be great for this team to succeed. And I think when you have both of them succeeding, it's really good for the team. It's a huge advantage, especially in a season like this one. But going forward, it makes sense that Demko is your guy. And, you know, I've been on the Thatcher Demko hype train for a long time now. I think he's ready to be the starter, and I think the Canucks believe that. And I think by giving him the start tonight, Friday night, then you're really showing, that's a huge vote of confidence. Like, that is a vote of confidence to Demko, and that is telling the fans, that is telling everybody that this is our starter, this is our guy, let's see what he can do. And he lived up to it on Friday night.
Well, let's look at it. I mean, you know, coming up on, which is crazy, I think only like a handful of games away from the halfway point of the season, I think a lot of people had this idea in their head that Thatcher Demko was going to go out and win the starter's role. And I think saying, what are we, 20 games in now?
Yeah.
I think he's done that, right? I think he has done that. I think he's gotten himself to a point where you can say Thatcher Demko can probably start 2 out of 3 games, right? Every 2 out of 3 games, I think Thatcher Demko's at that point right now where he should be the starter. But it's not because of Holtby being bad, I don't think. I think Holtby has been okay, maybe a little bit below expectations, with a lot of people thinking that he was going to come here and Ian Clark was going to turn his career around and he was going to be great and this was going to be a nice duo. There was a lot of people in that camp. I was partially one of them too. I think you'd be silly to not think that Ian Clark and the goaltending skill that he brings to a goaltending group would not make a goaltender better. So I think there might be still some work in progress to go with that. And I don't think we've seen the best of Braden Holtby yet, though we did get a nice game of him, like you mentioned, just the other night. But it's more about Demko. Like, it is more about Demko winning the spot and actually looking like a starter, because it's weird to think about that, right? Like, we've had Thatcher Demko now in this organization for, I guess, 5 years now? I think I'm all right with that when he was drafted. Was he 2017 draft pick?
I think he was 2016.
He was Pedersen's year, right?
No. He was, like, 2016 or 2015.
No, Colin.
He was 2015,
yeah,
I think.
Yeah, okay. All right, so 6 years now, I guess. And I think that you're at the point now where you've seen him kind of be Jacob Markstrom's backup. You've seen him be in a tandem with Braden Holtby. It's almost weird to think about, even though we've talked about it so much, like, to me it just feels weird that he is now the starter. Like, we've talked about him being the starter of the future for so long, or being, you know, the starter in the long-term future when Jacob Markstrom was here, then he was the starter of the future in the offseason. But now it's like, it's now here, right? Like, this is now the time where Thatcher Demko is the Vancouver Canucks franchise starting goaltender.
Yeah.
And it's a weird thing to kind of take in, I think, but I think we're just right on the cusp of that happening right now.
2014 draft for Demko, by the way. Just thought I'd...
Oh, so I was way off.
Yeah, it's okay. But a couple things, actually, Chris, that I found really interesting about what you said. My take is that we have seen the worst of Braden Holtby in a Canucks uniform. I don't think it'll get any worse. And the reason I say that is because, listen, I've said it before, you've heard me say it on this show, he was in the worst defensive environment in all of the NHL last season in Washington. The worst. Then he comes to Vancouver thinking it's going to get a little better. Canucks come out of the gate, and we know the kind of team defense that they played in front of him. There was obviously that big turning point when him and Miller had the little... I wouldn't call it a shouting match, but you know the incident I'm talking about.
Little stare down.
Yeah, the stare down. There was that, and I think from that point on, Holtby's kind of zeroed in now, and he's picking up on more things that Ian Clark is teaching him. And part of the reason I think Demko is the starter is just because he knows what Ian Clark wants more. You know what I mean? Like, Ian Clark wants specific things from a goaltender, and Demko knows those things more. And this is really interesting And I know this is the part of the show where I ramble on about goaltenders and people are thinking I'm crazy, but people at home, next time you watch a Canuck goaltender, either Holtby or Demko, watch how they play the puck behind the net. So what you'll see often with a lot of different goaltenders is they'll go to one side of the post and they'll look over their shoulder and they'll switch sides. You know what I mean? You know what I mean. With Ian Clark, what he really likes to get his goaltenders to do is to get down into the butterfly and have one foot on each post. Now, I don't think this is going to work with Mikey DiPietro, whose legs presumably aren't as long as Demko, Holtby, Solovs especially, and Markstrom. But when he has these taller goaltenders, he's able to get them to do this. And it's really limited the wraparound chances that teams have.
Yeah,
it was interesting to me, Chris, because in the game against Calgary, I noticed Holtby wasn't doing that. And I wanted to ask him in the post-game Zoom, because Nate Schmidt said, as a player, when things start to go south, you start to not... Wow, I can't remember how he worded it. He didn't say he didn't believe. You start to not believe, but you start to panic almost. And you start to go back to what you know and not what you've been learning. And almost you don't trust the process. You know what I mean? Like that was the gist of what he said. And I wanted to ask Holtby about that from a goaltender's perspective. But just over Zoom, it was hard to say, hey, Braden, I noticed you weren't holding your post right. Because you know what I mean? Like it'd be weird to say that over Zoom. So I didn't ask him the question. But I'd be really curious to kind of see how he's adapted to that. Because that's something that we saw him working on in training camp. That's something we see from all of Ian Clark's goalies. And I thought Holtby did a good job at it during training camp. Like, he looked solid doing that. He looked comfortable. I think he's really figured out the quiet feet thing, and I think I explained that on the last podcast, but basically looking over traffic and shuffling his feet very quietly right in front of him rather than big strides and trying to crouch down, looking around and below legs and all that stuff. He instead is looking over them. That's something Ian Clark did with Markstrom, something he did with Bobrovsky, and it works. It's a proven method. So with these taller goaltenders, he definitely loves to do that. Because you have to think, the forward that's in front of these guys is usually hunched over, right? So they're able to look over them. And, you know, the puck's out at the point, that's just the way it is. You keep your feet close together because you keep that narrow stance. I've been impressed with Holtby and how quickly he's picked up on the things Clark's taught him. I think they had a nice 8 days there to work together and then came out and Holtby had a great start. I think any time off that he's getting because Demko's starting, I think that's only going to benefit him in the long run, which is why I say that I think we've seen the worst of Braden Holtby in a Canucks uniform.
Yeah, I mean, we've seen some pretty bad ones from Holtby so far. We've seen a couple of good ones, though, I think, so far as well. So I'm still so curious to see how much his game actually starts to change with more work with Ian Clark. So that's something that we'll definitely have to follow as the season goes on. I do want to talk some more goalie on the other side, because I find it pretty interesting with the situation that we have with Jack Rathbone being sent down to Utica because he's been on the taxi squad all year long, hasn't been getting any action. He hasn't been loaned to Manitoba to get into any games with the Moose. And we have a similar situation with Mikey DiPietro. So on the other side, we'll talk about that situation a little bit. But first, I just want to throw to some ads and give a quick shout-out to the new sponsor of the show as well. Quads, you want to introduce ICBA a little bit?
Yes, the Independent Contractors and Businesses Association of British Columbia is the newest sponsor of the Canucks Conversation podcast. We are very excited to have them on. Listeners of the show, actually, Chris. I don't know if you knew that, but yes, listeners of the show, big fans of the show. We're big fans of them. And yes, super excited about this partnership. We'll give an actual ad to them in the ad rolls here. But yeah, I just wanted to give a quick shout out to the newest sponsor, the ICBA.
Absolutely. We're jacked up. Big supporters of local sports. Obviously, everybody heard them on TSN 1040 back when that station was a thing. And they wanted to help support sports as well and sports coverage. So we're super stoked to get them on board with us at the Canucks Conversation. So we'll throw to our ads right now, and then we'll see you guys on the other side to talk a little bit of Rathbone, a little bit of DiPietro. We'll get into some Utica situations as well, and then a quick little prospects wrap-up to get things going. And then we'll close out episode 138. So we'll see you guys on the other side.
Zephyr Epic is Canada's source for trading card games and sports cards. They ship free anywhere in Canada on orders over $50, and you can use promo code HOCKEYSEASON with a capital H and a capital S, all one word, HOCKEYSEASON, to get $5 off your order exclusively for Canucks Conversation podcast listeners. Be sure to join them live on Twitch for Epic Case Break openings. Follow them on Twitter and Instagram and Facebook at Zephyr Epic, Zephyr Epic, on all platforms.
That's right, folks. Hockey season is back, and so is Parallel 49 with some of their new beers. If you didn't try it last year, that was the first year that they released the Apricotopus Sour, the Apricot Sour. I highly recommend that one of my favorite sour beers. And another seasonal one that's come out is the Sea Salted Caramel Scotch Ale. This one's a little bit of a stronger beer, so only a couple of these should probably get you through a Canucks game this year. And don't forget to be sure to try out all of their classics like the Trash Panda and Jerkface 9000, or even the Tricycle if you want to mix it up and have yourself a little bit of a rattler as well. So go out and try Parallel 49 Beers and follow them on all their social medias. All right, short and sweet one here for our friends at Mike's Hard Lemonade, the Blue Freeze. If you haven't tried it, folks, you need to get out and try the Mike's Hard Blue Freeze. By far my favorite alcoholic beverage on the market right now. If you're going to just enjoy a few drinks at a game, or it's a Saturday night and you got a Zoom party with some of your friends, take yourself down to the BC Liquor Store, or your local liquor store, wherever you get drinks. Pick up some Mike's Hard Blue Freeze, the best, tastiest drink on the market right now.
The pandemic and a slow economy are making it tough on a lot of people to find steady, good-paying work. But one industry is bucking that trend. Construction companies are hiring and need more workers than ever before. Upload your resume to icba.ca and get noticed. With more than 3,000 employees on our ICBA team, our employment network can connect you to businesses crewing up for the 2021 construction season. Trades jobs that pay well, offer excellent benefits, invest in safety training, and give a firm career foundation. Check out icba.ca/jobs.
And a big thank you to all of our sponsors, including the newest one as well, ICBA. We're stoked to get them on board and work with them and see what we can do in the future as well. So Quad's not only a new sponsor, but a new Instagram page for yourself. Up to number 3 now for you, with a couple of hidden ones. We won't get into that. But Quad's at a rink, or Quad Stink, as I like to call it. How's the new Instagram going? Because you were actually at a rink tonight.
I was at a rink, and yes, everybody knows, people have long requested to follow my personal Instagram account, and I just don't do it. There are too many weirdos out there, even though, you know, I accept some people, but it's like, if we've never had a conversation in real life, or even on Twitter, if we've never had an actual conversation, I don't know you at all, don't request to follow my Instagram account where I post, like, pictures of my family and stuff. Like, there's way too many weirdos out there, man. Like, I've just had so many people, like, send me just the most alarming responses to, like, tweets and stuff. And, yeah, I block them. But it's like, why would I want to leave, like, anything about my personal life, like, open to these people? You know what I mean? It's like, screw that. So, yeah, I have a private Instagram account. So I was like, okay, maybe I'll start a work one. So I started a Instagram account dedicated to everything we do with our work, Chris, and I called it Quads at a Rink. I think it's a great name, but yeah, I'll be posting like pictures, some videos from Zoom calls, like just basically everything, like the pandemic season, kind of show you how everything works. And yeah, it's been fun so far.
Absolutely. Well, good start, and I appreciate the shout out of you calling me 6'4" on there.
Aren't you 6'5"? I wrote 6'5".
Oh, you wrote 6'5"? Yeah, 6'5" in my dating profiles back when I needed those, but not in real life, actually.
Imagine adding... Do you even need to say you're 6'5"? Like, isn't 6'4" enough?
I always thought that 6'7" was where it, like, really changes. Like, I always thought that, like, what, you know, hell? from 6'4" to 6'6", you're pretty tall. But as soon as you hit 6'7", it's like... Honestly, it's similar. Like, I'm a pretty tall guy. When I saw Tyler Myers for the first time in the locker room, I was like, wow, this guy's very tall. Like, there's people, I think it's 6'7" is the height where it's like, okay, this person is very, very tall. And I think everyone under there is just, you know, I think everyone over 6'1" is pretty tall. But like 6'1 to 6'6, I don't see much of a difference in the in how tall a person is. I think it's 6'7 is where you're like, damn, that person is tall.
See, I'm not a liar on my dating profiles. I don't lie about the height. You gotta own it, man. You have to own it. I can't believe you don't want to own 6'4". Like here I am, I'm like 5'8". I'm like, yeah, take it or leave it. Actually, I'm 5'9". But yeah, I'm like take it or leave it. 5'9". This is what you get. And yeah, I don't know. I'm not gonna come out here and be like I'm 5'10". 5'10", no, though, I think that's a good height. I think that's where it changes. Like, yeah. You're talking about how it changes at 6'7". If you're 5'10", like, I think that's kind of the prime time. And I'm so close. If I wear shoes, I'm good to go.
That's what I was kind of going with 6'4 on the profile. If I'm wearing shoes, I am 6'4", a 6'5", but I still can't dunk. Anyways, I wanted to... Actually, you brought up something there that I wanted to mention. You mentioned blocking people, and if you just don't know what they said, I actually unmuted one of my two people that I had muted on Twitter.
Can you say who?
I don't think I'm going to say who, but they haven't been as annoying. I looked at their page the other day, they haven't been as annoying lately, so I unmuted a person. One of the two people that I've muted, so there's only one person now that I do have muted on Twitter, and one person that I have blocked, who I will say who I have blocked. It's Skip Bayless.
Okay.
I just can't deal with that guy. Just can't deal with him. I don't know what it is, but everything he says pisses me off. And I won't say the person I have muted, but I do want to move on a little bit now because we mentioned we were going to talk about on the other side. Jack Rathbone now sent down to Utica. Can we both agree it's a good spot because of what we've seen so far this season where he hasn't been able to get into NHL games? I think it's a good thing that he's going down to Utica. I'm curious to get your opinion on it because I don't think we've really talked about this off-air either.
Yeah, he needs to get some reps in, absolutely. And this isn't only to benefit Jack Rathbone. Like, you've been watching the Comets games. You know the left side of that blue line is in shambles right now. Like, they're missing Ashton Sautner. He was with the Moose. That's a big part of their blue line. And he wasn't there. And I think Jet Wu is playing his offside, if I'm not mistaken. I'm sure you can touch on this a little more. But from what I had heard and what I had seen, Jet Wu playing his offside wasn't the most ideal situation. So now you're going to get a natural lefty. If you've got a Wu-Rathbone pairing, like, people are going to want to watch some Comets games. People are going to want to see those gifts, Chris. Like, this is your time to shine if Rathbone and Wu are on the same pairing time.
It's almost a dream pairing. I think Rathbone gets there, and I think he's instantly the best defenseman, honestly. Like, from seeing what he did at training camp, I thought he was a guy who was going to be ready for the NHL. And I had this thought the other day when I was watching Comets, and I was like, man, imagine if Nils Höglander did do that thing where he went down to the AHL. And I was just watching, like, Carson Folk go in on the forecheck. I was watching Cole Lynn go in on the forecheck. I was just watching these guys like Gadjevich skate around the ice, and I was just thinking, like, man, Nils Höglander is on such another level than these guys. Like, he is on such another level. If he was in the AHL right now, he would be leading the league in goals and assists and points. Like, he would be the best player in the AHL. He's so much better than a Sven Berchi or a Sam Annis, who were some of the top scoring players last year in the AHL. Like, Nils Höglander is so much better than them already that if he would have done that AHL stint, it would have just been hilarious. Like, it would have been so funny to see what he would be doing against these AHL competition. I think that what we're going to see with Jack Rathbone is he's going to go down there and he's going to hop into the first pairing. Like, I've seen a lot of similar things with this kid. Like, he is a dynamic puck mover. He really is. He looked excellent in training camp against NHL competition. He looked so confident against these guys. And I think he's going to go down to Utica. I think he might be paired up with potentially Santini or Rinkie, who are some veteran guys from the St. Louis organization. I think he might be paired up with one of those two right shot guys, and that's going to bump down some of the lefties to get Wu maybe back on the right side. And this actually might hurt Wu's situation a little bit, where you might actually see Wu have to sit out a game or two. And in a season that's so short and so compact and so different in the AHL, you know, where points really don't matter. Like, it's an absolute 100% developmental league at this point because there's no playoffs. They're not going to play for a cup. It's just going to be them going out and getting their games in. And I think when you're in that situation, you just need to get as many games out of a guy like Jet Wu as possible. I hope that they don't sit Jet Wu in place of a guy like Mitch Elliott, who's bounced around in the ECHL and AHL the last couple of years. Like, if it is a developmental league, you got to play all your young guys over these veteran players. Like, because wins don't matter. Like, they really don't matter. The only thing that really matters right now is ice time. Like, you can lose every game this year, but if your guys develop, your young players develop, that's all you can really ask for from your AHL team. I'd be curious to get your opinion on how the AHL kind of feels this year going into it, though.
Well, I think you're absolutely right. Like, it has to be a developmental league this year, especially with no playoffs. In the past, that's not what the AHL has been. The AHL has been a league where we've seen guys like Petrus Palmu and others get pushed out, right? And it's like, well, why isn't this guy developing? Like, try and develop this guy, but that's not the case. And it's interesting because I look at the hockey's minor league system, I look at it and compare it to baseball, and baseball, there's like way more levels of minor leagues, like, you know that, but there's a focus at every level except for AAA, and if you're a young prospect, you're probably not going to be in AAA for too long. You're probably going to go to the show very fast, but there's a focus at every level to develop. Like, that's what the minor leagues are for, and I think that's what they should be for. Like, for baseball, any, like, journeyman is just going to go play in Korea or Japan or one of these other places where there's good baseball that you can actually make a pretty decent wage at. With hockey, it's interesting because the AHL is kind of like that league. You know what I mean? Like, it's not a pure developmental league. Yeah, you see guys that are journeymen playing in AAA, absolutely, and they're the taxi squad. That's baseball's where the term taxi squad came from. And it's interesting to me because you don't really have that with hockey. Like, yes, you have the ECHL, but for the most part, the AHL isn't much of a developmental league. So for it to kind of be thrown into that situation this year where it is a developmental league, like, yeah, you're absolutely right. Like, you cannot sit Jet Wu. And yeah, I get it that you have to also respect that the Blues or Blues prospects are playing there. But man, at the end of the day, this is the Blues coming to the Canucks organization, right? Like, this is the Blues prospects going to the Comets. It is not the other way around. So I get it. They've talked a lot about collaboration and they all want to be pulling on the same rope. I get it. That's great. Listen, there's no playoffs. Pulling on the same rope is great, and I know you want to win games for moral victories or whatever, but man, at the end of the day, like, this needs to be a situation where Canucks prospects are developing. And now I think there's an even bigger magnifying glass put on that now, yeah, that Jack Rathbone's down there as well.
Yeah,
as
absolutely.
Jet Wu.
And it's something that you said there, which is really interesting, and I've talked with Corey about this a lot off air and a little bit on air. That situation with St. Louis, it's fine right now, right? Like, everything's going good right now. You know, the most interesting connection between those two teams is John Stevens and Nolan Stevens, brothers who are one from the St. Louis organization and one from the Canucks organization. They are having to play together. They had a 3-on-3 shift the other night, and they're the two sons of Tampa Bay coach John Stevens. Was he assistant coach? Anyways, John Stevens of the NHL coach. I'm completely messed. I don't have a computer in front of me to mixing up. I have a sink and a toilet, so I can't really search stuff up right now. As you can tell, when I blew the draft year for Thatcher Demko by like 3 years. But anyways, yeah, I think that's the thing. Like, there can't be games where these guys are sitting out. There can't be games where you don't at least have one or two prospects out there killing penalties or on the power play. And I think that might have been a little bit of a worry because some of the players that came in from St. Louis were some older veteran guys who are just off the taxi squad instead of more prospects in the St. Louis organization. Like, you look at that team, you look at that Utica Comets team right now, all the young promising players are Canucks property, right? Like, there's not a guy from that St. Louis Blues team where you're like, wow, look at this 21-year-old who's trying to adjust professional hockey in the same way that Gajewicz or Folk or Wu or even, you know, any of these guys that are in that kind of same age group, and Cole Lins, like, they're more kind of Sven Berchi pieces, right? Like, some of the defensemen like Santini or Renke or Nathan Walker, who's won a Stanley Cup, like, these guys are a little bit older and they're kind of just in the AHL because they couldn't keep a job in the NHL, instead of young guys who are trying to work their way up to the NHL. And you don't want those young guys to be limited because of the other guys in that situation. So I think that everything's all nice and rosy right now. I do wonder what's going to happen moving into the future, though, to see if any of these guys miss games because of the older veteran players. So it'll be an interesting thing to follow, and you guys know we're going to have the Corey Hergot on the show every Tuesday to talk about it anyway, so we'll get into that a little bit more on Tuesdays. But Quads, I know that there's something that I've been tracking a little bit, you've been tracking a little bit, and it's Alex Edler, and I guess him is the pairing with Nate Schmidt. Where do you want to kind of go with this one to start? Because I know I've been doing a lot of research on this pairing as well, and we can kind of go any direction here.
I almost want to go back to what was said at Morning Skate. So, after Morning Skate, that is. I asked Travis just if he thinks Edler's changed anything from last season, because there's an article that will be posted by the time people are listening to this on Canucks Army by the super talented Stéphane Roguet. It is a really good read about how Alex Edler's actually facing some of the toughest minutes of his career. And it was funny because I was talking to IMAC and Harmon tonight, and we were briefly talking about it, and they, like, didn't believe it. Like, they were like, even when it was Edler Tanev in the Willie D years, like, Edler's facing the toughest matchups right now? And yeah, the answer's yes. And you should read the article by Stefan, because it's really, really well done. But I asked Travis, and I just said, you know, despite him facing these tough matchups and the toughest of his career, he's having the best defensive year that he's ever had. Like, from a pure defensive point of view, he's having the best year he has. And I asked him if he changed anything from last year, and Travis made a really good point. I didn't really think about this, but I think he hit the nail on the head. Like, basically what he said is, I think he's playing better because not only is he a smart player, he was saying all that good stuff, but he's not playing power play, and he's not really being relied upon to be an offensive play driver. Like, right now, he only has to focus on playing in his own end, transitioning the puck. He can snap it to Nate Schmidt, who's an excellent player in transition. And I think, you know, that pairing has been one of the best in the NHL, and I don't think a lot of people realize that. That pairing has actually been one of the best in the NHL. That's two left-handed defensemen. Travis Green, we thought, would be pulling out his hair at that pairing. But instead, it's been the Canucks' most consistent pairing this season. And again, I think that playing with Schmidt has really helped Edler. And I think it's a combination of him playing with Schmidt and less ice time that's really helped Edler kind of find his game again and really, you know, have one of the best years of his career at the age of 33.
So I wonder how much money he's making on the next contract then.
Oh man, that's the other thing. Well, I mean, give your thoughts on Edler first, and then we can talk
for
about
sure.
His next
I just,
contract.
I've seen a lot of the similar things that you said. I think that that's been the best consistent pairing for the Vancouver Canucks through this season so far. I wouldn't go as far as what you've said to say that they're one of the best pairings in the NHL. I don't know what Stefan's been writing and you've been editing, but that's...
Yeah, that's Daniel. Daniel Wagner, baby. Pastabulis. Okay. He wrote that today. He was right. I read it all. You should,
I might have to check this out as I pass out after this. I just think that they've been an excellent second pairing, right? I think that's what they've been. I think they've been an excellent second pairing so far this season. The numbers haven't come for them. Their on-ice shooting percentage is low. Their on-ice save percentage is low. I think that eventually they're going to kind of balance out and find a lot more consistency with that group. And I just think that that's one of the pairings that I'd like to see stick together, because I do think that there's a nice mesh between what Edler is able to do at his age and what Nate Schmidt can bring with his skill set to that pairing. I just think that there's a lot that works there. And I like the idea of Edler being on the left side and making passes across to another lefty who, when receiving passes on the right side, is going to have such a nice vision of the ice. And that's something that Jordy Benz talked about a little bit in the interviews, as I've kind of wanted to get in more depth from these guys, because Travis Green now playing with two pairings with lefties as right shot guys, or lefties on the right side, that's something that we never saw from Travis Green, like, ever, right? And that's kind of interesting to see how he's transitioned to that this year. And I wonder if something's clicked in his brain, because it's like, oh, this is working. Like, Jordy Benn with Hughes is working. You know, Nate Schmidt on the right side with Alex Edler is working. So I'm wondering if maybe that's something Travis kind of falls in love with, seeing what has been able to make his defense corps be better at. So, yeah, I think it's been a good pairing. Like, it has been a good pairing. And we don't have to talk about the contract for Alex Edler. There's another day in the offseason when we will talk about that for sure. Let's close things out with a quick prospects report, and then we will get into a little bit of a betting segment as well. I don't really have too much to update. Obviously, Vasily Podkolzin with the concussion, he's been out. Who knows what could happen on Saturday morning? I'm waking up with absolutely zero information on if he's playing or not. We saw the report from Rick Dhaliwal, who talked to Rotenberg, who said that he'd be 3 days, was it? Like, that's... I'm sorry, but that's not how long you should be out with a concussion. And I'm not a doctor, but I have seen a lot of concussions watching sports and playing them as well. That looked like a concussion. Hitting your head that hard with a shoulder, having the struggle to get up, the inability to be able to walk down the hallway by yourself, it looked bad. I'm not going to say it was a concussion. I'm just going to assume it was.
Well, hang on a sec. The guy, Rotenberg or whatever, he said he had a minor concussion. Like, those were his words. He's like, Vasily is a minor concussion. Dude, there's no such thing as a minor concussion. Like, it's a concussion. You have a concussion. It does not... You do not just... Oh, yeah, you know, he's fine. We're giving him 3 days. He'll walk it off. Like, okay, you just said an interesting thing. Yes, neither of us are doctors, but both of us have talked to doctors. And I have talked extensively to Dr. Rosenblatt from Advanced Concussion Clinic in Vancouver. She's been very gracious, and I almost wanted to do a story on it, but I also didn't want to beat a dead horse. But I really wanted to just send her the clip and be like, hey, what do you think of this? Or sorry, the quote, and just be like, hey, what do you think of this? Like, is 3 days enough time to diagnose a concussion? But I'm sure that story would be way too long, because she would have a lot to say about that. But it's just,
you might have to reach out, like, to her. That's another former ads on TSN 1040 that might be looking to support some local sports content as well. As well as ICBA. We're stoked to have them on board. So, yeah, I mean, Pod Colt, like, he could... For all I know, I could wake up tomorrow morning and he'll be in the lineup for Ska, right? Like, that would just be the worst thing possible for this kid who really, like, Ska's set up right now in the standings. They're not going to drop much lower than second, I believe they are right now in their conference. They're not going to drop much lower than that. All the other teams are way below them. They're probably not going to catch CSKA because they're kind of a little bit above them. So really, like, even in their right way of thinking, it is like, they don't need to rush him back if they want to just use him for the playoffs. But if anybody's going to rush a player back, it's going to be the Russians. I feel like, looking at what we know about them and what they just said about minor concussions, which clearly is not a thing and clearly did not look like a minor concussion the other day when we saw that as well. So I don't want to wake up Saturday morning and see that he's in the lineup. I hope that he's out for another week. I don't think he should play potentially even the rest of the regular season. I mean, this team finishes the regular season at the end of February. Playoffs get going in March. Let's just see Vasily Podkolzin in playoff action. I think it helps the Canucks fans just kind of take a deep breath about the situation with Podkolzin. And I do think it helps Scott, like, getting a healthy guy back. You do not want to rush him back at all and have any long-term effects. But unfortunately, long-term situation for Vasily Podkolzin, Ska probably doesn't care. I mean, he's leaving, right? Why would Ska care about the long-term situation for Vasily Podkolzin, who has said time and time again and turned down contract after contract because he wants to go to North America? Why would Ska care at all if they rush him back? Like, that's the only thing that kind of scares me a little bit. So we'll see what happens tomorrow morning for sure with that. Anything you want to add there, Quads?
No, except I did have one thought. So you said Ska, but then you said CSKA. If it's ska, wouldn't it be like C-ska or kska?
I don't know what to tell you. There's quads. CSKA, but like I've on the broadcast, they do say CSKA and ska. I don't know what the difference is because of that.
Interesting.
Maybe one day I'll learn more about it now that I got the jersey. Quickly want to just do a little bit of a prospect report talking about the Yuka guys as well. This is going to be super quick, just 1 minute. Cole Lind obviously looks great. He's got the 4 goals. Jonah Gajewicz is looking good around the net. He's got 4 goals in 5 games as well. But the guy who's shocked me the most is Carson Folk. I love the way this kid plays the game. He's all over the ice. He's up and down super quick. Loves to shoot the puck. I believe he's currently leading the Comets in shots on net right now. He's very good in the faceoff dot as well. He's looked excellent so far in the faceoff dot. On the power play, he's playing the Pedersen zone there on the right side with the one-timer left-handed shot. And he's been ripping them. Like, this kid has a shot, and he likes to use it a lot. So, loving a lot of what I'm seeing right now from Carson Folk. Jet Wu, there's some ups and there's some downs. Like, this kid is tough as hell. He's always in the right spot, but he's just lacking a little bit of a decision-making trait kind of right now as a professional. He lacks that just a little bit, and his skating isn't really up to par from what you would like to see for a guy who's going to develop into an NHLer. So those two things are the things he needs to work on, but positionally, he's excellent, and strength-wise and in the defensive zone, he's pushing around professional players already. So that's great to see from Jet Wu, and that's kind of just my wrap-up there about the Comets. So let's dive into a betting segment. I've been talking for a while, Quads. I need a drink of water. So let's start this thing off for me. Let's talk betting. What are we talking about today?
I lost my bet today. I had a nice parlay down. I was feeling pretty good about it. I bet that Florida would cover the spread against Detroit, so they'd win by more than a goal. They won 7-2, I think the final score was, whatever it was, they won. So I had the option to cash out. I put a $10 bet down, had the option to cash out for $16 before the Canucks game, because I also bet that Edmonton would beat Calgary, and then I bet that the Canucks would beat Winnipeg. Bad idea, so I ended up losing that. But that parlay, that was going to pay me like $86, man. So I had to go big on him. I had to go big or go home. That was my bet of the day. But yeah, as for actual betting advice, I feel like now's not a good time for me to give betting advice, given that I just lost my parlay of the day.
That's kind of where I'm sitting too. I was looking good too, and maybe that's what we'll talk about this week is parlays, because with 4 NHL games tonight, I decided to hit a couple of different parlays. Didn't end up winning because I had the Canucks in both of them because I was feeling confident. But have you noticed that making a difference on your parlays when you actually bet the spread instead of just like an outright win? Like, I've just noticed that, like, you get a huge difference. Like, you mentioned it. I bet on the Hurricanes covering the spread at 1.5. They ended up winning by 2. I bet the Panthers covering by 1.5. They ended up winning by 5. I had the Oilers. I didn't take the spread, and they actually did end up winning by 1, so that's good that I didn't. But then my final bet was the Vancouver Canucks winning by at least 1.5. So I bet with the spread there, and clearly they didn't end up winning that. But like you said, same thing, man. Like, I had that was a $5 bet, and that one ended up coming out at $148 if I would have hit that. So I just needed my Canucks to do something for me. But like I've learned this year betting, don't bet on your favorite team. That's a good advice for this week's Odd Shark betting segment. Just don't bet on your favorite team, because like, you're going to bet against your favorite team. You know, because then if your team loses, you get some money out of it. And then if your team wins, just be happy about it, you know? Put a couple prop bets down on your favorite team, but don't bet on your favorite team to win. That's got to be, like, lesson one of sports betting. And I'm surprised we haven't got it to it this far yet. So that's all I kind of have for my betting segment. Anything else you want to add here, Quads, or anything before we close out the episode?
Yeah, don't bet on the Leafs. That's the other thing. If you bet on the Leafs, you're going to lose. They're going to disappoint you every time.
I'll note that as well. Even against Ottawa, eh?
Oh, yeah. Especially against Ottawa.
Well, we'll wrap things up here. If you guys are listening to this on Saturday morning, tune into Sportsnet 650 on Saturday at 4:30. Quads and I are going to be jumping on with Jamie Dodd for Canucks Central Saturday. And I think that's going to be a lot of fun, Quads. We're going to do it through Google Hangouts, and you and I are just going to kind of have like a roundtable discussion on the weekend Canucks show with Jamie Dodd. So I'm stoked to get on the radio with you, bud, because it's been a while. Like, last time you and I were on together was Rob Fay Nation, right?
Yeah, and I think that was like a year ago, was it not? Like literally a year ago.
Been a while. So we're going to have some fun tomorrow if you guys want to check it out. Sportsnet 650 at about 4:30 to 5:30, I think, is when we're locking it in. So appreciate you guys coming here for another episode of the Canucks Conversation, episode 138. So we're kind of creeping up to 150. I think we got to work on something big for 150 quads. And by the way, we got to celebrate over 100,000 downloads and listens of the show. A couple weeks ago. So thanks for that. And thanks for the recent reviews. We got one saying that it was Corey's fault. And I do appreciate that because it's Corey's fault that we ended up getting another 5-star review. So it's not really a bad thing for Corey. It's kind of a good thing if you think about it. So we'll wrap things up there for my co-host, David Quadrelli. My name is Chris Faber. And thank you so much for tuning in to another episode of the Canucks Conversation.
Hello. Thank you for calling Thomas Drance.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.